Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 33 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today's episode, we need to talk about Islam. Joining me, as always, is Blue in Alabama's Michael. Michael, this is going to be an especially explosive episode. I hope you've got your house secure and you're able to maintain the death threats.
Well, I've went in complete hiding. That way, you know, people can't find me.
Yeah, well, this blog is a good place to hide. This is a podcast. If you're going to... I'll be like, this will be one place they'll never find us on the Alabama Liberal podcast. What if it showed in like one of our eight listeners is like a devout Muslim? What? This is outrageous that they're doing this. And I knew that we would eventually have an episode about Islam specifically, but I had been kind of putting it off.
Yeah.
I wasn't really excited to have one about it. It's people go, yeah, what do you think about Islam? Oh, how, the weather's nice today, isn't it? I don't know. There's some problems. Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, you kind of go out of your way not to talk about it because in my case, it's really the biggest single issue that I feel like both parties are wrong about.
Yeah.
Because I don't really believe either party has the right answer. I think they're both kind of not really dealing with the facts and off on their own. With somebody like the Republicans, so you can't even really talk about it. And you almost need a scalpel, not a sledgehammer, because with the Democrats, it's almost like nothing's going on, everything's normal, don't pay attention to this.
Right.
I mean, when I was listening to some of the stuff at the DNC, I thought there could be a suicide bomber right behind them, and they'd be like, it's a rainbow bomber. What are you talking about? This guy's not trying to kill us. He's got road flares. These are love signs. But then even saying that, the Republicans, who you said that, they're like, right, that's what we got to blow them all up. Wait a minute, I didn't say that either. You know? So, like, they take what you say and they kind of twist it into all Muslims are bad, they're all terrorists, they're all bad people. So it kind of comes down to Democrats. They don't want to acknowledge there's a problem because I think maybe they think Republicans will hear it and that will just feed into what they believe, which is that it's all a problem. Like, it's either, like, none a problem or all a problem. It's complicated. I mean, you kind of with me that it's something to have mixed feelings about?
Yeah, definitely.
We're going to get deep into it. I think it's going to be unusual. I don't think a lot of people have talked about it in the way that we're going to talk about it, but I have problems with it. What if you said right now, Islamophobe, and hung up the phone or something? You know, you just, in my honest opinion, it's false, and it's not even really a thing. To me, Islamophobe is a misnomer anyway, because Islam is an ideology. Somebody could be afraid of communism. Nobody says, oh, you're a Scientology phobe. Nobody ever says that. It's an ideology. Christianity is an ideology. Islam's an ideology. Communism's an ideology. These are just ideas. It's not really the same thing as being a racist or a xenophobe or a homophobe or something like that. Like, these are ideologies that people have, so can be afraid of an ideology. Like, if you don't think Scientology is a good thing, you can be afraid of that. If you don't think Islam's a good thing, you can be afraid of that.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Islamophobia, I'm like you. I don't think that Islamophobia is an actual thing. I think that a lot of people are just uneducated about what Islam is. They're terrified of what it's being portrayed as by certain people. They look on the small scale, 9/11. When you're talking about 1.5 billion Muslims in the world, you know, a handful committing a terrorist act, that's kind of a small scale. But they take that and they blow it up. Now, I know people that had no clue what Islam was before 9/11. They didn't know what Muslims were before 9/11. And first images of Muslim now is 9/11.
Right.
I think a lot of people use Islamophobia as a sort of like, say it, but it's really just a lack of education about the term.
What you said is true, but I think you could also interpret that to some of the liberals that really defend it.
Yeah.
Really go hardcore into defending it. So let's get into it. There's really four different types of people who are talking against Islam, and they're not all the same. So when liberals are like, well, not all Muslims are the same, I don't think they are. I don't think anybody thinks that they're all the same. I don't even think Trump thinks that they're all the same because he's had rich Saudi business partners and some of the royal families he's done business with in the Middle East. There is a Trump hotel there. Why?
Yeah.
So I don't even think he thinks that they're all the same. But I think there's four different groups of people that are speaking out. And I think when they say not all Muslims are the same, not all criticisms of Islam are the same, which I think people miss that a lot of times. Like, they kind of lump it all in as though they're all the same. One group is just your flat-out xenophobic people, racist people, whatever, but they don't even, I don't even think they're talking so much about Islam as they are just Arab people in general. You know, like, I think they associate Islam and, like, the brown religion, so they look at it as, like, Islam is the Middle East, it is Iran, it is Saudi Arabia, it is Arabs and Persian people, a little bit Pakistan, a little bit Afghanistan. It's the brown religion, and that's what they kind of think of it as. So that's one. Two is, I think, Christians, that it's just kind of the opposite team. Like, I don't even think that it's necessarily prejudice in the way we think about it. I think it's like, hey, biggest religion in the world, Christianity. Second biggest, Islam. They're two teams. They've been at each other forever. You had the Crusades. You had the fall of Constantinople that finally toppled the Roman Empire when the Turks took that city. You've had the Ottoman Empire. You've had, I mean, Islam spread as far as Spain at one time period. Charlemagne's grandfather had to repel it from France. They've been at each other a long time. I mean, this is not a new thing. Christians and Muslims have always wanted territory. They've always had missionaries. They're the two biggest religions on the planet. They're the two of the only really major religions that recruit, because Jews don't even recruit people, and Hindus don't really recruit people. So when you talk about missionaries and going out, it's really only Islam and Christianity that does that. That's why you see Islam is like started in the Middle East, and now it's in Indonesia, it's in East Africa, it's in parts of West Africa, spread all over the globe. There is a war going on between Christianity and Islam that's been going on for over a millennium. Three is to people kind of like me that are just sort of just don't really believe in any religion. And so when you look at Islam, I mean, it is the most strict major religion on the planet.
Yeah.
That's just the fact. When you look at, like, the staggering majority of theocracies that are still on the planet, a staggering majority are Islamic. There's not that many Christian theocracies still in existence. You know, the theocratic states, majority are Muslim. And when you're somebody like me that wants to live in a world really kind of beyond religion, or that's moved past it or whatever, I don't like that we get lumped in a lot with the Trump people and the Christian people or whatever. And I think I'm talking about me and Bill Maher, Sam Harris, Salman Rushdie, people like that, Richard Dawkins. We kind of get lumped in with them, which I think is not really fair, because it's almost like when I make fun of Catholics and Mormons and people like that, nobody really has that big a problem with it. People kind of laugh or whatever. Even Catholics don't get that mad, really.
Yeah.
But when I make fun of Christians or whatever, like, people are like, yeah, you know, I could see what you say. But then talking about Muslims, sometimes Christians get madder about that than they do when you make fun of Christianity, which is interesting, because it's almost like they're saying you need to give, you don't believe in any religion, but you need to give a special waiver to Islam.
Right.
Which is wrong. I mean, I'm not going to do it. So I think the third is the atheist people. And then the fourth, I think, are ex-Muslims, people who grew up Muslim and they're not Muslim anymore. They know it on a better level. So I think in each of those four cases, you saw people who knew more and more about Islam as you kept going. The racist people, the Trump people, they know nothing about it. The Christian people know a few things, some more than others. The atheist people they're generally threatened their religion, and they don't see this as a positive thing. And then the ex-Muslims that are now speaking out against it, your Ayaan Hirsi Ali, people like that, they know it very, very well. What kills me is when I saw Ayaan Hirsi Ali, she went to a Barnes & Noble bookstore. I used to live in New York, and she was doing a speaking. And she went there, and there was somebody who was like a Christian, you know, who was like telling her why she didn't know about Islam. And I thought, how dare you? How do you tell her to shut up when it's like, that's her, that's what she grew up in. Like, that's her experience. Like, she knows a lot more about it than you do. And she's just like, well, here's my experience with female genital mutilation. I read that that doesn't even happen that much. And I'm like, what do you mean you read? Like, she's telling you about her, like what happened to her. I mean, I saw like a white woman, liberal, feminist liberal. If you looked at her too long, it would be a microaggression, and they'd write a blog on Jezebel about it or whatever, and then they're over there telling Ayaan Hirsi Ali to shut up because she didn't want to have her clit split open. Something is wrong in terms of the perceptions of when ex-Muslims speak out or whatever. A lot of times liberals are not there to wrap them up. They're not there to like really pull them into their groups or whatever. They're there to kind of be like, oh, you should shut up.
You know, kind of like what you were saying as far as liberals kind of being, what's the word for it?
Cowards. I mean, if it had been anybody else, Michael, if it had been Lena Dunham up there being like, somebody fat shamed me because I was naked on girls and they said I needed to lose some weight, they'd be like, oh my gosh, poor thing. So to have a woman stand up there and basically talk about this horrific practice that happens to her and does happen to women, despite what they believe.
Yeah.
It does happen to a lot of Somalian women. And just tell her to shut up. And then it's like, don't talk about this or whatever. I mean, I found it kind of incredible. And because I've just seen them coddle anybody else who wasn't this.
Right.
So when we get into it with the four different groups or whatever, those are the people who are kind of speaking out against Islam in different ways. And they're saying different things. They're not all saying the same thing, which I think is important. The neocons, I don't even know if I'd call Trump a neocon necessarily. He's a whole different type of conservative. I don't know that there's a name for him yet. Somebody will eventually coin him as Trump-con.
He's just Trump.
You know?
Yeah.
The answer is to, like, basically ban them from entering America. So, you know, you're not welcome here, get out, don't come here, which I'm not saying, Bill Maher's not saying, Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins. Nobody's saying that in the atheist category. Nobody's saying that in the Ayaan Hirsi Ali category. They're not saying that because then they wouldn't be able to come here. So nobody's saying that in the last two categories. The Trump people are kind of saying that. That's their answer. Some of the Bush people and the neocons are like, no, Muslims are great people. That's why we have to blow them up. It always drove me nuts when you had people kind of talking about, oh, Bush was better for Muslims than Trump is. That drove me crazy when people would say that, because I thought, if you told Muslims you can't come to America, that would be bad, but I'm sure they would rather that than Bush being like, we're going to come to your country, we're going to start a civil war, 10% of you are going to be dead within 5 years. I'm like, I'm sure that they don't think he was better for them, because it was all phony, it was all fake. And that's one of the things that gets me about this debate, is that it's fake. When Bush is like, Muslims are great people, that's why we have to drop bombs or whatever, people are like, see, he said they were great people. And then if you have somebody like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, is like, no, the religion of Islam is not good, but the people who are trapped behind it, they are good. People are like, she's an Islamophobe killer. It's all fake. Like, I mean, what somebody's saying may be better for these regions in the long term, but it sounds like a harsher criticism than somebody who's saying, no, Muslims are good people, which is why we have to, like, destroy their countries and rebuild their governments and create civil wars. Ayaan Hirsi Ali get called terrible things. I've seen her, to my face, be called terrible things, but Donald Rumsfeld, nobody says Donald Rumsfeld's a racist. Nobody says he's an Islamophobe.
Again, it kind of goes back to Democrats being overly sensitive about a lot of things, and I think Islam's a big one. Anytime anybody comes out to anything negative, kind of like what you were saying, Democrats are afraid to say one thing negative because Republicans would jump on it and take it to the extreme and say,
right,
oh, well, see, now we have a Democrat agreeing with it. If you get on that.
That's happened to me personally.
Yeah.
Because literally, because somebody was like, Islam's a religion of peace. And I was like, no, it isn't. I was laying out why. And they go, Muhammad preached nonviolence. And I go, is that before he raised an army of 10,000 people and killed everybody in Mecca? Like, it's like, what are you talking about? You know. But when I was going into this, I was laying out specific historical facts. And the second I got done, somebody else was like, yeah, that's why we're going to blow them up in Syria. And I was like, I didn't say that shit at all. And it became, when I was critiquing the religion, the ideology, it became a critique of every Muslim that's ever existed. And they should all be killed, and we got to blow them up, and they're cockroaches that are going to take over the planet. And I didn't say any of that. And it became, it's one of those things where nuance just gets steamrolled. I mean, it just gets absolutely steamrolled. I get what you're saying, where it's like people are kind of hearing what, I watched Bill Maher's show before, where he'll say something, like he'll say, I wish moderate Muslims would step up and fight these ISIS bastards, and then Rula Jabril will jump in and be like, they're not all terrorists, Bill. Did he fucking say they were all terrorists? I mean, he didn't say that. People on the liberal side, even the stuff we just said, Rula Jabril would probably jump in and say that we're saying all Muslims are terrorists, which nobody said that. Like, nobody even hinted at that. To me, terrorism is a smoke screen. It clouds the issue of Islam in a big, big way. To me, it's almost helped Islam avoid a lot of the more real problems inside of it, because the terrorism thing is so out front and it's so smothering. I don't know why the women can't take a rapist to court without it being, they're not all terrorists, Brody. And I'm like, what's that even got to do with terrorism? Like, when I'm talking about women's rights and, like, female genital mutilation, honor killings, stoning an adulteress, a woman can't get fair justice in the court system, the courtships are really weird, the divorce laws and marriage laws are strange, a man can marry an 8-year-old, a man can have 3 or 4 wives, but if a woman commits adultery, she's going to be killed for it. These have nothing to do with terrorism. But you can't even talk about those things because the terrorism thing's so out front.
Right.
I mean, that's literally happened before, where I've been trying to talk about one of these problems. They're not all terrorists. The word terrorist never even came up. Like, it was never even entered into, where people get an Islamist confused with a jihadist, and they get that mixed up all the time, to where jihadists, they're like, I think they estimate like 0.5% of Muslims. But Islamists are a lot bigger than that. When you talk about countries that are majority Islamic, you don't have that many democracies, really. Whenever you ask people, they go, oh, there's Turkey, there's Indonesia. I wouldn't even really call those democracies the way we think about them.
Right.
Like, I think Turkey in the last couple of weeks has turned into a dictatorship in all but name. I mean, they had a failed coup, and now that Erdogan guy's like, don't worry, I'm still in power, guys. And then everybody in Europe's like, oh, fuck, what are we going to do about this guy? I mean, they don't know how to get rid of this clown. And that's always the one token example of a country that they throw out there. Like, this is the one Islamic country that runs the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
And you can't really say that about Turkey. Turkey anymore. Indonesia, I haven't been to Turkey. I'll admit, I have not been to Turkey. I have been to Indonesia. Going to Indonesia, getting into the hotel, they had a bomb-sniffing dog come around our van and smell it, and they had a guy with a mirrored plate stick the mirror under the van to make sure there were no bombs being. This is like a safe area of Jakarta. This is like a tourist area of Jakarta. And they had to make sure, and I'm like, this is a level of security that I think, outside the hotel, a dozen men with different AK-47s and machine guns, and when I was asking different questions about the tourist attractions or whatever like that, I don't know if this area is so good today or whatever. It's not really what we think about. Like, I mean, if you went to Toronto, and the guy's like, oh, you can't go there because you might get blown up, I don't think that's really what we think about as like a, you know, like a safe country. And I mean, in Indonesia, they had a dictator for decades. They had one dictator, and they had a coup that killed all the Chinese, Indonesians, all the communists. Again, religion came down to it, to where they wanted to get rid of all the communists because they were atheists in the way that they think about it. They didn't want anybody that wasn't religious. People should watch a documentary called The Act of Killing and then The Look of Silence that kind of gets into that. At that time, Indonesia hired different gangsters to form death squads and go around and kill all the what they called communists, which were basically just people that weren't that religious. We hear Turkey, we hear Indonesia, and Indonesia, I don't necessarily consider that like a stable country. I mean, they've had civil wars, they've had dictatorships, they've had genocides, they've had religious conflicts, tribal conflicts. They even had terrorist attacks. They had terrorist attacks in Bali. It's not really even about terrorism for me, but whenever people try to dismiss that, I'm like, okay, terrorist attacks. 9/11, the London bombing, France, Belgium, Spain bombing, the Chechen rebels, the Chinese Muslim population up in the north of China, that's the Boko Haram in Nigeria, Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Libya is a fucking clusterfuck. Syria, terrorists, obviously ISIS, Iraq, terrorist attacks, Iran, Palestine, Hamas, there's been terrorist attacks in Saudi Arabia, there's been terrorist attacks in Jordan, Al-Qaeda's stronghold is in Pakistan, there's Al-Qaeda in Yemen. There's been terrorist attacks in Mumbai, because India has a significant Muslim population. There's been terrorist attacks in Bali. You got to smell a fish at a certain point. Like, there's got to be something there. It's not, you can't just look at it as like, there's 1,000 separate Islamic terrorist groups in the world, and you can't go to a majority Muslim country without finding, people say, oh, no, you got ISIS and that. I'm like, yeah, but get beyond ISIS, you got Al-Qaeda. Get beyond Al-Qaeda, you got Boko Haram. Get beyond Boko Haram, you got Al-Shabaab. Get beyond these things. Like, it's too big to be a coincidence. There's got to be something going on. To quote Trump. Something's going on. Something's going on, Michael. Something's going on. Like, I don't know how much I should really say or whatever, but, like, my wife was a Muslim. And it's a different perspective when there are some people out there, and I'm not saying the majority, but there are some people out there that think she should be killed because she's not. It gives you a different perspective. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a Christian at all. And I mean, I'm really kind of against it at this point. I think I went when I was in kindergarten and it never took. I never liked it. But there are not Methodists out there that are like, you know, if Christian in kindergarten, we really should kill him for not being one anymore. You know? That doesn't exist. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't happen. I'll give you an example. This is a scary example. But when we lived in New York, it was a town car driver that was taking her to the airport. Her workplace provided it. This guy came and picked her up and he saw her name. The name she gave or whatever was an Islamic name. And he started talking to her and asking all this stuff about Nigeria and all this stuff. I mean, he was Nigerian. He was African American, but he's a Muslim convert, and he was going in long detail about he wants to move to Yemen and join this rebellion and shit. I mean, he never said the word Al-Qaeda, but that's what he was talking about. And he went to this, and he thought that she would agree with him. He was saying all this to her, thinking, oh, she's a Muslim woman, like, she's going to immediately take my side. And when she said, well, I really hope you don't do that, and I don't know why you're telling me about it. And then he said, well, maybe the rebellion in Nigeria. She goes, please don't. Nigeria's got enough fucking problems without some stupid American going over there to, like, wage jihad, you know, blow up a fucking whole time. Like, we have enough problems without taking in, like, people that want to cause fucking problems. Like, I mean, you know, there's enough violence there. We don't need to take in people that want to cause violence or whatever. So, but he thought she was going to be on his side. And then when she wasn't, and she didn't agree with anything he was saying, he got really quiet. And then she saw where he wrote, like, a long blog post about her, and she's a sellout, she's part of the problem, people like her don't get it, they don't understand the struggle and all this shit. Who knows where that guy is? But this is a guy who thought it was so safe that she would agree with him, that he felt like it was comfortable to talk about basically moving to Yemen to join a fucking terrorist group. You know what I mean? That's basically what he was talking about.
Yeah.
You know? And then when she didn't agree with him, because, I mean, you and me, if somebody approached us and they're like, hey, you want to join the neo-Nazi party? They'd have to believe there was at least at least a 50-50 shot that we would shoot him down. Like, at least 50-50 we would say, go fuck yourself. You know, like, are you crazy? So the fact that he got mad at her for, like, basically pooping on this idea of his or whatever, like, he just thought it was so safe to talk about it, and then she would agree with them, and she would get on board with them, and, like, really revealing. Growing up in Alabama, you always think, people always think that, like, the Ku Klux Klan's everywhere. And maybe they are. Maybe we're just naive and don't know it. But, I mean, when I moved to New York, people were like, well, how many Klansmen do you know? And I was like, none. But it has some parallels because I think back in, like, the 1860s, the Ku Klux Klan was the American ISIS, like, back in that time period.
Yeah.
Because if you look at ISIS, Trump talks about Obama created ISIS. George W. Bush created ISIS the second he fired the Iraqi military. He created the insurgents because they came in and said, oh, you know how you Sunni guys are always worried about living in a majority Shia country and you're always worried about the Shias coming in and killing you all? We're going to make sure you're even more worried about that. You're all going to lose your jobs and we're going to hire Shia military officers to take your place. You couldn't have said we want an insurgency more if you'd have. It was on at that point. Iraq is majority Shia, but it's been under Sunni control for a while, and they got Iran right there. That's their next door neighbors. They fought a war not that long ago. They're always worried about Iran coming in, taking over, killing all the Sunnis. And when they fired all the Iraqi military people, the Sunnis, they basically created the ISIS or whatever. Well, think about the Civil War. When the North came in to the Southeast, and they basically fired all, I mean, I would say fired, but they basically said all the Confederate Army, there is no Confederate Army anymore. You had all these men that had had 4 years hard war, and they thought they were going to win, and they thought, you know, all the fucking slave owners that told them all this bullshit about they'd get money, they'd get land, everything's going to be great, and the Confederacy win the war, misled them all. So imagine you're a Confederate, you know, Army officer, and you've been fighting your balls off for 4 years, and then you come back and you lost the war, probably lost your house because Sherman probably came through and burned it to the ground. Lost your land. You lost everything. Your wife might have died. Your kids might have died. Everybody, half the people in your town might have died. You lost everything. That started the Ku Klux Klan. And it's the same thing with ISIS. ISIS was made up out of these former Sunni military officers that were afraid they were going to lose everything. And then they took it to an extreme. Ku Klux Klan, who they take it out on? Black people. People who had almost nothing to do with their real misfortune.
Yeah. You know?
But they were easier targets because the Union officers and troops, they were too protected. It was easier to kill the black government they were trying to set up at that time period. It was easier to go after civilian targets and stuff. So there's a lot of parallels. A lot of parallels. To get back to the point, I guess, is the guy I worked with at this grocery store, he's like, hey man, my uncle's in the Ku Klux Klan. I was like, what? What the fuck is this? And he's telling me this or whatever. He's like, yeah, he's pretty big into it or whatever. And it was like, it was kind of weird. It was like he was trying to brag, but it was something that obviously didn't impress me at all. So it's like when somebody tells you that they've got like, hey man, I'm 1/16 Cherokee, and you don't really care, and they're just trying to, you know, if they're trying to teach something that just doesn't mean anything to you. My dog's part wolf. It's like a quarter wolf. Who gives a shit, you know? He told me this or whatever, but I mean, he could tell it repulsed me. I said, well, I don't know. It's weird that you think I'd be impressed by that. He goes, well, you know how it is. I mean, you're so exclusive. You probably couldn't even get in if you wanted to. And I said, well, I definitely don't want to, so don't worry about it. You're just like, yeah, but I think I might could get you in. And, you know, have you heard of the John Birch Society, which feel like your white collar racist, you know, they're like your upper scale racist. But I mean, I never wanted to be into any of that. But these guys thought, okay, here's a white guy in Alabama. We don't know him that well, but he's Southern or whatever. But they thought there was like a 1 in 10 shot at the end of this. You know, even they thought their odds sucked. So they didn't think it would be easy to recruit. I think it's the same thing with these people where it's kind of, I think it's revealing that they think that people are going to be on their side. Because I just think if people tried to, like if somebody came up to you and said, hey, Michael, how's it going? You like working at Old Navy? Well, let me ask you this. You want to join the Aryan Brotherhood? Like, they'd probably know there's a good shot to say, no, get away from me. I don't want to be a part of this. There's really just too many Islamic countries that have terrorist attacks and violence for it. There not to be some type of common thread. Like, there's got to be some type of common thread.
Yeah, there is. And I kind of go back to a comment you made at the very beginning when you said Christianity and Islam is not at the same place. I think when you look at Christianity, we had the Protestant Reformation, you had the Great Awakening. Christianity has been through these revolutions, and what you have today is not what you had in the 1500s, the 1400s, and the 1300s as far as Christianity. Islam has not had that yet. And I think, and that's why a lot of people are calling for moderate Muslims to take back the religion and to lead the fight against these radical insurgents. And until that happens, what a lot of Republicans are calling for is more bombing and more killing and more, they don't understand. That's what's causing the radicals. We're not, look, our military is unstoppable, but we cannot stop that. You're not going to use a military to stop an ideology.
Right.
You're just growing that ideology. It's going to take moderate Muslims take back the religion to basically say, this is what we stand for as Muslims. This is what Islam is going to be. And I think it's going to take a little bit of adjusting and tweaking and coming out in favor of more equal rights. I mean, a lot of people say that's never going to happen.
Right.
The same thing about Christianity. And
right.
I mean,
until
that happens, I don't see anything changing.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of interesting points. Because on this, I'm constantly of two minds. You know, like I really am the Gemini on this one, where I'm kind of like on both sides. But so on the one hand, what you're saying is true. Look at who defeated the Nazis, right? It had to be another white country. Like it had to be another Protestant country that had to do this. Like it had to be other European countries. It had to be America. It had to be England. It had to be Russia. It had to be other majority white Protestant countries that had to come in and defeat Nazis. And the same thing with the Civil War. The Union had to do it. America had to do it. Like if you'd have had Mexico be like, we're going to defeat the Confederacy for you, the Civil War would have went on 100 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have like an outside force defeat a problem like that. Like it's not possible.
Right.
The Bush people, the Cheney people, the Rumsfeld people that want to come in and basically do it, you can't. Like it's not up to them to do it. Like you go, because you're not fighting a person. They keep acting like we're fighting a human being. You kill Bin Laden, there's going to be ISIS. You kill ISIS, there's going to be Al-Qaeda 2.0. You kill Al-Qaeda 2.0, there's going to be the Sword of Muhammad. These groups change all the time. The groups don't matter. There's a thousand of these groups. It's the ideology that's what you got to get at. And that's where I also diverge a little bit, because on the other hand, Islam, they've already had several attempts to rein in train. Like when you had Wahhabism come in, and like Wahhabism almost died out. Like whenever you talk about, like, so in America, when we talk about our old timers and our conservatives and our old people, and they talk about the glory days, they're talking about a time that was much, much more conservative. In the Middle East, when they talk about the good old days, they might be talking about a time that was much more liberal. Because like in the 1920s, I mean, hell, Beirut was the Paris of Asia in the 1920s. 1930s, the Maldives were a vacation spot. I mean, Iran, before the Shah of Iran was a nice place to visit. I mean, all of these countries had it a little bit more together. They've had several reformations come through their religion where it was like you'd have the Wahhabis take over, and then like a more moderate strain would take over, and then they keep going. But they keep going back to the ISIS, the radical Wahhabi clerics in Saudi Arabia. They keep going back to this period of extremism. And this has happened like 10 times where it just keeps going back to this. Where I come from, and this is a sacred cow, this is where I start slicing up the steak, I really believe it's the religion itself. Like, I think that it's not saying that all Muslims are bad people. I'm not saying that at all. Like, I think, and the fact that I even have to say that shows you the problem. When I talk about Mormonism, Joseph Smith was a con man. But when I say Joseph Smith was a con man, nobody says all Mormons are inherently dishonest. Nobody makes that connection.
Right.
Like, nobody makes that connection. When I say L. Ron Hubbard, he started Scientology as a Ponzi scheme. Nobody makes that connection that all Scientologists must be, like, con men. Because 90% of them are victims.
Right.
95% of the Church of Scientology are victims. Say 95% of people feeding money into the Mormon Church. Mormons send missionaries to places like Polynesia. They take their wealth so they can build strip malls in Salt Lake City. Like, they take money from people who don't have it to build things. And Jehovah's Witnesses? No, thank you, frankly. Go away. You know, like people who say, oh, I can't celebrate my own birthday? No. Come on, get out of here. You know, so Jehovah's Witnesses a lot of times are naive. They're kind of a little on the slow side. I mean, people who voluntarily want to sacrifice that, I can't vote. I can't do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
I can't have a birthday. I can't celebrate Christmas. When you're a Christian and you're too good for Christmas, something's wrong. So, like, for me, the Orthodox Jews are a little kooky, a little quirky, you know. I probably wouldn't ever want to really spend serious time with them or whatever. But, I mean, like, but again, when I criticize these different religious groups, people are able to separate out the ideology from the people. People don't look at a criticism of Mormonism and Joseph Smith as a criticism of all Mormons. So when I criticize the religion of Islam, they immediately warp that into there's 1.5 billion terrorists in the world, which I'm not saying. Like, nobody, like, I'm not saying that. But when I look at the religion itself, and I think part of it's because of the stasis we're in when it comes to the way the technology has evolved, is that it's kind of locked us into thinking we have the same religions forever. And there's nothing before them, there'll be nothing after them. There was a time period before Islam and Christianity and Judaism. There was many religions before that time period. There'll be hopefully a time period after them. But because of the way technology is, the way the internet is spread, it's like everything's kind of frozen, religious right. spectrum a little bit. But at the time period of Muhammad, I mean, so a little bit about who he was. Because something I think is interesting is that sometimes even Muslims don't know that much about him because of the whole thing where, like, you can't make images of him. Like, you can't have it. So people say, what is that about? Like, why can't you draw him on a t-shirt? Why can't you have a drawing of Muhammad? There's a thing in Islam where they don't want you to have, like, images of him because they're afraid you'll worship him instead of God. Like, Muhammad's not supposed to be the son of God like Jesus. He's just a prophet.
Right.
He's a messenger, and that's it. So he's not in divine origin, nothing like that. God just speaks to him. So they don't want you to draw, like, pictures of him or worship him or anything like that. I get what they're saying, but that's also had the double meaning of sometimes, you know, there's been movies made about him, at least not recently. I think Anthony Quinn made a movie about him years ago, which if he made a movie like that now, he'd be dead. But there's not, like, that many movies about him. There's not that many contemporary analysis of him. So there's kind of a mystery around him. Like, he's not as well known. I don't think he's as well known as Jesus is, frankly.
Oh, no,
like, in terms of their religions, which is ironic because I don't think Jesus existed. But I know Muhammad did. Why do Christianity and Islam, how did they diverge? How are they different? See, to me, I'm not a Christian. I don't even think Jesus existed. But to me, he is, like, a really good guy who never lived. And Muhammad did a lot of things, and he definitely was real. And he was a real historical figure. Jesus was a carpenter. Muhammad was a merchant. He was a traitor, and he basically wanted to take over, like, Mecca or whatever. And he raised an army to do it. Like, he didn't have a group of these disciples and these followers, and they go out and spread the word. Not, like, he raised 10,000 people, and they went and took Mecca.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing a difference where Jesus is kind of like a martyr, and I'm going to turn the other cheek, and I'm going to have these disciples. And Muhammad's like, no, let's raise an army, and let's take this by force. Jesus was crucified. Muhammad had people crucified.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesus was against slavery. Muhammad had slaves. Jesus was never married. Muhammad was married to 13 women. He was a polygamist. He had 13 wives. His favorite, Aisha, was 8 years old when they got married. So you're starting to see a difference. And I think when I look at religious leaders, like what we think about is like a religious leader. I think of Muhammad as more like a brilliant strategist. He was a brilliant political person. He was a brilliant leader of men. But so was Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
And people don't understand this, but at the time Genghis Khan was alive, people that followed him thought he was holy. So at the time, Genghis Khan used some spiritualism to kind of, I'm not saying Muhammad necessarily like as violent as Genghis Khan, but I look at them as more like, you know, Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, Muhammad, all these great leaders of men at one time or another. People thought King Henry, when he started the Church of England, he was a prophet.
Yeah.
We've seen over and over again, it doesn't matter if it's King Henry or Brigham Young. Brigham Young and the early Mormons, they were violent as hell. They killed settlers left and right out in the Utah Territory.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen this over and over again. A religious leader is also sometimes a leader of men, and that means that a violent leader, because at that time period you had to be. And I look at Muhammad as like a good conqueror. He had good war plans. He took a huge amount of territory. I mean, at the time that Islam got started, the Arabian area was pagan. And so his idea was to basically, like, no, we're going to take this offshoot.
Yeah.
Judaism started first, and then Christianity was an offshoot of that. And then he thought, I'll do an offshoot of Christianity and Judaism, and that'll be this thing that we'll take that basically and make it a distinctly Arab version of monotheism. And we'll take that and wipe out the pagans. And he did. He killed any pagan that wouldn't convert to Islam. Like, it's kind of transparent that he was a man and he changed his mind about certain things, such as the satanic verses, where when he first took Mecca, there was the three goddesses that they were really attached to. And he said, okay, you can have goddesses and that'll be. And then once he had enough followers that they didn't need those people anymore, he went back and changed his mind. He said, oh, no, that was Satan that was talking to me. And now God is telling me, no, you can't have these three goddesses and they're part of the devil. So every time he got more and more territory, he was able to get a firmer position on what God was telling him, and he was able to strengthen his grasp, and that's all political. So to me, that's somebody motivated by political considerations.
Yeah, definitely so.
And I hear people be like, well, you know, the Islamic world, I mean, they were so far ahead of the Christian world at the time period of all this stuff, and they talk about, like, algebra got started there, agriculture got started there, modern medicine. That's true. But what they leave out is that a lot of that stuff predates Islam. The Sumerians ran into this, or they had Mesopotamia that this stuff gets started.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of that stuff predates Islam. So really, the argument that they're making is kind of an argument against Islam, if you think about it, because it's basically saying that all their biggest progress came before 600 AD. Like, it was all kind of before that, and then after that, all that. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can kind of make that argument. And I look at it that way, where I'm like, look at all they accomplished before this religion. Maybe after it, they might be something. Hey, religions can change, but they can also go extinct. I mean, right now, there's nobody making sacrifices to Thor anymore. Like, nobody's out there making sacrifices to Jupiter. Nobody's out there making sacrifices to Pluto. Roman mythology and Greek mythology and Norse mythology, all the pagan religions pretty much, except Hinduism, they're all pretty much gone. They've tried to change a religion so many times that it would just be easier to let it die and just create something brand new and something else and let that come into its place. You say that and people get kind of mad when you say that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think a really good example of that would be Christianity. And what I was saying as far as going through such a radical change. And if you look at Christianity today, look in America, for example, look at Christianity in America, that's not the same Christianity. It's not even close to the same version of Christianity they had, you know, in 500 AD. I think some of the Christians that lived then look at what we have today and be like, what is this? Like, this is a whole different religion.
You're right. But it always kind of strikes me as like, I just don't like the equivalencies people do sometimes. They feel fake. Like Keith Ellison, he was on Real Time one time and said, well, you know, you shouldn't judge all Christians by what the Amish do. And I went, right, because of all these radical jihadist Amish out there running around, you know, I mean, I just thought like, yeah, they're real violent out there in Dutch country. So, I mean, people sometimes may, even our most radical Christian would probably be Amish people. And they go out of their way not to bother anybody. Like, they really don't know anything about anything in the terms of the modern world. They don't want to know about it, but they're not trying to take over area. The Amish are not going to invade Alabama, you know, like they're not going to take large swaths of area. And the Amish women, when they reach a certain age and they don't want to be Amish anymore, they just shun them. They just let them leave and they shun them. Which, I mean, some people think that that's cruel, but it's not like they're saying, oh, no, you're my prisoner. You don't get it. You're my property.
Yeah.
You have to stay here. Even if you don't want to be here, you're 12 now, we're going to marry you to that 60-year-old man across the street. If they really didn't want to be in a marriage like that, they would leave. And the Amish, because, you know, let's be honest, the Amish are pretty fucking smug, right? Like, because they're, you know, like they kind of like being living martyrs or whatever. So they would, you know what, if you were to go, just go ahead and go. You're not as holy as me anyway. So they would kind of get off on that. They kind of want, they kind of want you to leave, but they kind of want there to be less and less of them, so they can be like, oh, there was 500 last year, now there's only 100, I guess I'm one of God's chosen. So they kind of want there to be fewer and fewer and fewer. So people sometimes, they ask me, they go, you know, you don't diss Israel enough, you don't go after Jews enough. And I'm like, there's 15 million Jews, there's 1.5 billion Muslims. When you see Muslims be like, there's going to be a holy war, it's going to be on between Jews and Muslims. I'm like, well, if you need a 1,000-to-1 advantage, because that's what you got in terms of numbers, and Jewish people don't even recruit. I mean, they don't even make an effort to, like, you know, we're the chosen people. They don't really want, like, new people to come in.
Like, you go to a temple, and you ask to become a Jew, and they're just going to tell you no. Like, no.
Yeah, I know. New York, I went on dates with Jewish girls, and one girl was like, yeah, I'm not going to date anybody who's not Jewish. I'm like, why are you here? What'd you show up for? Why'd you come if you weren't going to? Like, I'm open-minded. I'm like, you just said you weren't open-minded. Everybody likes to think they're more open-minded than they really are. Everybody thinks they're open-minded. And most people aren't. And that even applies to liberals, because open-minded would be like when Ayaan Hirsi Ali wants to come speak to the Berkeley campus, they don't get her banned from the campus. But that's not open-minded when you're talking about kicking people. When I graduated from college, the speaker, like I graduated in the wintertime, so they didn't have a speaker. But the summer before that, Dick Cheney gave the commencement speech. I mean, this was like the end of the Bush administration, and I guess Dick Cheney went there because it was the only place he could go and not get booed. It was the only place they wouldn't throw tomatoes at him or whatever. But he went there and thought, if Dick Cheney can come speak, why can't Ayaan Hirsi Ali come speak to a liberal campus? But when you get into the whole Israel, the Middle East is obsessed with Israel. I mean, they're just obsessed with them. They just think everything bad that happens to them, like our crops failed, fucking Israel, man. I'm telling you right now, Israel's over there. So they just have this thing about them, like every bad misfortune. I mean, in Minneapolis, I remember getting a cab ride from a Somali cab driver. For some reason, there's a lot of Somalians in Minneapolis, the whitest place in America. It's strange because you go to Minneapolis, you get off the plane. Most of the white people there are very, very white, Scandinavian, German, but their black people are Somali mostly because that was the refugee city. That was the resettlement city they chose for the refugees to go to. But so you'll see like the whitest woman you've ever seen. I mean, she's fucking blue. You see her veins practically. And then right beside her is like a Somali woman wearing the full burqa. And they don't talk or interact, but they're walking past each other and stuff. It's almost like a ghost city on top of a city that nobody talks about. But for all of the cab drivers in Minneapolis are Somalian practically. And you'll get a ride from a guy and he'll just go on this long bull wander about Israel and how, and I'm like, what does that have to do with Somalia? Nothing. How has that fucked your life up? It hasn't. So, I mean, I understand Palestinians. I understand why they might, the more and more and more that I heard, I'm like, every Muslim person in America, and like the entire Ummah blames Israel for their problems. Even if it's a country like Somalia, that you got people in Indonesia being like, fucking Israel, man, that's why the currency's messed up. I'm just like, what do they got to do with your problems? I don't talk about that much because it's like they've already got a 10,000-to-1 numbers advantage and then they blame them for everything. And their leaders did this on purpose. A dictator in Libya or Syria or Iraq or something, they'll use Jews on purpose as scapegoats. Oh, yeah. Then they don't focus on how shitty their leaders are. I mean, if you're in Syria and Bashar al-Assad's like, yeah, sorry that all that money came up missing. Looks like it was one of our Jew bankers that did it or whatever. Oh, I'm going to get that guy. You're not thinking about him buying a new private jet to fly to London on every weekend to take your money to a London bank. It's using as a scapegoat. It's just a tough thing to get into when you're talking about Islam because it's just not really a good answer. I mean, you can't really agree with the Trump people because all their answers are wrong. Trump wants to drop fucking nukes in Syria. Yeah, that'll go over great. Because it ain't like those countries hold grudges or anything. Like, if you drop a nuke in Iraq, you're going to have a holy war for 100 years. If you thought Japan was like, oh, kamikazes, and we get to drop an atomic bomb because Japan's never going to quit. I mean, I couldn't imagine the Middle East. I mean, it would rage for 100 years.
Yeah.
And I just, when what we're talking about with reformations is really moderations. Like, they becoming moderate. And, I mean, Bill Maher said it before, but when he's out working on the Sabbath, his Christian neighbors don't say, we really should murder him. So we're talking about like moderation. And so tough. Because after Islam, the second most violent religion on earth is Christianity. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
But even in that regard, like from America, which I think most people would say is probably the most Christian industrialized nation on earth. And we're from Alabama, which is like the second or third most religious state inside of America. We were the last holdout on interracial marriage, one of the last holdout on gay marriage, probably will be the last holdout when they finally force us to sell marijuana, don't even have medical marijuana, don't even have a lottery as of right now. So Alabama is the most religious state. And we grew up in a place that, like, wasn't Birmingham or Mobile or Montgomery. I mean, it was more rural and religious itself. And there were a lot of weirdos. Like, I remember when I was a waiter, there'd be, like, these crazy women with the beehive hairdos and denim skirts that would come into Applebee's, and I'd be like, oh, shit, I'm not getting a tip. They don't believe in tip, you know. So I get the religious people come in. One time a girl wanted like a non-alcoholic margarita, but it had to be in a regular glass so people around her didn't think she was drinking. Stuff like that. It's like, really, nobody cares that much. But, you know, there was a lot of stuff. I mean, the big debate was whether the county would go wet or not, whether they'd sell alcohol and stuff. Even in that really religious background, I was a loudmouth. Religious boy the most religious boy in our class, I used to tease him. Because he'd go, I'm not going to have sex till I'm married. And I'd say, if the hottest cheerleader right now came up to you, dropped your pants and said, I really want you, take me right now, you wouldn't do it? He said, no. I said, you're gay. And he turned out to be gay. Like 10 years later, we found out he was gay. So it's kind of funny that, like, even at that time period, I thought, hey, you got a man talking about waiting until sex before marriage? Something's up here. Something's not right. And for all we know, 5 years from now, Tim Tebow is going to come out of the closet finally. But I thought it was interesting that I said he was gay and he was gay, but even that kid, I mean, like 99% of our high school was Christian probably, but even then, me being really outspoken about not being religious or whatever, nobody beat me up over it. Well, it probably helps that I'm like a foot taller than everybody else. Like five of them didn't get together and decide to beat me up. I mean, like nobody wanted to like punish me for this. Like nobody was like, oh, he's not a Christian, we're going to beat the fuck out of that guy. Like it never even came up. And this is in the most religious county of the most religious state, the most religious. They abort the plans at the last minute. Oh shit, we just heard he's got a bottle rocket. But the most religious county in the most religious state in the most religious country is Christian. Nothing ever really that. And I think that's just where Christianity's at. Like I think for the vast majority of Christians, Christianity has become kind of like the Starbucks of religions. It's sort of the, it's kind of the Starbucks jazz. Like you go into a Starbucks, they get that light jazz in the background. It's sort of like, it's background music, like it's elevator music. Like people are Christian, they pray, they want to live a good life, whatever, but it's not something that governs every waking moment. Like it's not something that would keep them from a glass of champagne on New Year's Eve, or it doesn't even keep people from getting a divorce. I mean, a lot of America is the most Christian nation on earth, and it's also got one of the highest divorce rates and the highest teen pregnancy rate, accidental pregnancy rate. Like, it doesn't even keep them from these things. They've done studies that said Christians are just as likely to get a divorce as non-believers, in some cases more likely to. Like, it doesn't impact them from doing it. Like, it doesn't stop them. So I just think when you're looking at that, when people talk about, well, you can moderate it like Christianity, Christianity moderated it simply because people kind of stopped. You know, they just sort of stopped being that religion. Like, it was really more of an ending of religion than anything else.
Yeah.
But it's not as easy to do that with Islam, only because of the rules. Pray five times a day. Like, it's hard for something to be in the background when it's like, oh, it's noon, the bell's outside, they're calling us to pray, let's get down and pray. Like, when you're praying five times a day, it's just harder to really put that in the back of your mind than it would be just from the basic rules of it.
I hope our listeners don't take this and twist it like what we've been saying. Don't take this as we are coming out and saying everything is wrong with Islam and all Muslims are bad and anybody who believes in Islam is bad. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that there needs to be a change, and Democrats and Republicans, both, neither one of them have the correct answer. You know, don't,
right?
Because I know, I already know it's going to get completely misconstrued, and it's going to be the talk of the liberal blogosphere.
It's so tough, because on the liberal side, I mean, they truly are acting like nothing's going on. When they had that Orlando shooting, the conversation the next day was about gun control. They were choosing to focus on the method he did his attacks, and then right after that, the guns. If you had guns, this couldn't have happened. Then in France, they had that guy use a truck to kill as many people as the Orlando shooter.
Yeah.
It's crickets. Because the whole thing with Orlando was like, if he hadn't had access to assault weapons, this couldn't have happened. And then they saw a guy use a fucking truck to kill just as many people in France. And it just disappeared. And then it was like, well, let's not leap to conclusions. On the conservative side, Trump, his campaign has gone from propaganda to paranoia.
Yeah.
For now, it's like, Obama's the founder of ISIS. You know, Trump must be tapped into, like, somebody's great uncle's email or something. Because I used to get these crazy emails that would basically be saying what Trump saying now.
Trump has went like full on McCarthyism.
I mean, people got to understand that, like, what Trump is saying, I'm not for that either, because, like, I don't see how somebody like Grover Norquist could be for Trump, because his wife, I think, was an ex-Muslim too. And so when he's talking about a ban, I'm not for what he's saying about a ban, because keep in mind what I was saying before, that would directly have hurt my personal life.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine it being like, your wife doesn't get to come to America, they revoke all visas for anybody who's a Muslim, she doesn't come, her family doesn't come, your son's not born. You know, I'm not advocating for that. And I mean, I wouldn't tell people to advocate for that. I'm not even saying, that's why I get frustrated with people when they say like, oh, it's not the religion, it's the culture. And they keep going after the culture instead of and I'm like, that the other way around. Really, what they're saying is more racist than what I'm saying. If you think about it, when you're talking about the culture, you're basically saying, oh, Arabs are savages. They can't control themselves.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they're saying more. And I'm like, well, how do you interpret that? If you're saying that about Arabs, how do you interpret that to Persians? How do you interpret that to Indonesians? How do you interpret that to Yorubas and Hausa Nigerians? How do you interpret that to Somalians? I mean, how are you translating that? But when people are talking about the cultures, I'm like, maybe it is the religion. Like, maybe there's something about it that's making different cultures worse, and maybe that's to say that the people would be better without it. Like, things do change. Like, I use it as Russia. Like, I use it as communism and Russia, to where I don't think Russians are inherently evil. I think they use a bad ideology. And when Russia changes, when Russia gets rid of communism, there'd probably be no difference between Russia and Scandinavia. But it's just that they've had a bad system for 100 years, and it's just like there's nothing about them as people that makes them worse. Like, it's just, I reject that more soundly. I think it's dangerous for Trump to be talking about Obama's the founder of ISIS, and any Muslim that's against him has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you think that's, like, dangerous?
Here's my thing. I was actually talking to somebody about this, and somebody was talking about the Syrian refugees and whether or not allowing refugees in was endangering America. And I'm like, My problem is, you know, I'm not going to say yes or no whether or not some Syrian refugees may come over and radicalize or get other people to radicalize. But when you have a presidential candidate saying what he's saying, like trying to tie everybody that's against him to the Muslim Brotherhood, that's coming out talking about putting every single Muslim in the United States on like a registry and all of this, you're singling them out. That's going to automatically put them on the defensive. And
right.
You want to talk about risking radicalizing somebody, that's doing it.
Right.
He doesn't understand how powerful words can be. Like, I think he still doesn't understand that.
Right.
He hides behind the, I'm not politically correct, but you can't really hide behind that.
That's what people don't understand is, like, they think what I'm saying about, like, the ideology of Islam means I'm for enhanced interrogations and drone attacks and
yeah.
Going to war with Syria, going to war with half the Middle East. That's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Of what I'm talking about like that. I mean, I think you could make a case that all these people joining like jihadist groups and stuff, I think it's the death rattle. I think a lot of these people know that it's over. You're going to see these theocratic Middle Eastern governments, they're going to become more and more sexist. They're going to become more and more violent. They're going to become more and more authoritarian because it's when you start feeling power slip from your fingers, you grab tighter and then more of it slips through your fingers. Like, you can never feel it. You cannot have had power for that long and then feel it leaving you and then not get desperate. And I think that's what you're seeing. I think you're going to see these governments, terrorist groups and oppressive governments, they feed off each other. That's something I wish I had said a long time ago. I wish I'd opened the podcast for that. When people talk about Bashar al-Assad, well, we got to have him because he's fighting ISIS. Well, he created ISIS. Or he didn't create ISIS, but he gave them a foothold in Syria because he needed them. He needed them to destabilize the legitimate Sunni insurgency. When people talk about where are the moderates in Syria or whatever, there were moderate Sunni insurgency groups, but Bashar al-Assad wanted ISIS to co-opt them and basically ruin them so that everybody would be so afraid of ISIS taking over Syria, they would say, we got to keep him in power. We can't have a country without him. And you see that in a lot of these countries. People use it, you know, in Yemen, in Nigeria, and whatever fucking government they've got, Somalia, I don't know if they've got a government there, you know, whatever like five guys that they've got in Mogadishu calling themselves a government, people use that to where they use like these terrorist groups to say, you don't know how bad it'd be if they took over. You gotta let me suspend the Constitution. You gotta let me get rid of the democracy. You gotta let me have full power. You don't know how bad it would be if they took over. And then they point to a failed state like Libya or Somalia or something where nobody's in control and said, hey, you want that to be us? Huh? You want that to be Syria? You want that to be like country away from Israel? Have that on your border? No, I don't think so. So you better let me go ahead and suspend the Constitution. So they feed off each other in that way. And I think that the Reformation is coming. Iranian youth are completely restless. They're sick of this old fuck Ayatollah Khomeini living. And when Ayatollah died, they've already replaced him. But I think when this current one dies, I think they're going to be like, what do we need this for? Why have we had this? And you probably would not have seen Iran be this religious this long if they weren't basically in a holy war with Saudi Arabia. And you probably wouldn't have seen Saudi Arabia be this religious this long if they weren't in the holy war with Iran. You know, they feed off each other. For the last 30 years, and it's changing, but you basically had Russia using the Shia governments, okay? They used Hezbollah in Lebanon. They used Iran to basically be their terrorist agents. And that's why when people talk about the relationship between America and Saudi Arabia, that's where that came from, is that Saudi Arabia saw Russia encroaching. And, I mean, America, it's a marriage of convenience. Pre-9/11, pre-Bin Laden, the Sunnis kind of allied with America. The Shias kind of allied more with Russia. And it was sort of a proxy war between communism and capitalism. And it was just sort of a war in general that Shias and Sunnis hate each other. But I don't think you would have seen the militarism on either side if Russia hadn't have invaded Afghanistan and they said, oh, shit, all the Sunnis that Saudi Arabia sent over here, what if they start stirring up trouble in Chechnya? We better ally this. You know, shit, it's all been a game between, like, Russia and America that fed into a Sunni-Shia war that's been going on for a millennium. And so all these things could be changing when you have a younger generation that's like, wait a minute, why are we doing that? Eventually, Vladimir Putin will die. Eventually, Ayatollah Khomeini will die. Eventually, even Zawahiri will die. He might already be dead in the mountains of Pakistan, and some Pakistani general is like, no, he's still alive. I buy him cigarettes every day. You'd be afraid of him. Be afraid of him. These corrupt-ass governments use these groups. Al-Qaeda is used by Pakistan to scare India. because they feel like if as long as they've got ties to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and these different groups, India will be afraid that another Mumbai can happen. So it's all pawns and being used. I mean, there's very few terrorist groups that are not somewhat allied with some shitty government trying to hold on to power. And I think as you start seeing more democracy spread, this was what Bush thought. He thought if you could spread democracy to the Middle East through force, you would basically get rid of these terrorist groups eventually. And I think that they have to do it on their own. I think they're already doing it on their own a little bit. And I think that these governments are going to get more desperate. In the short term, in the next 25 years, the Middle East is going to be horrible. And most Muslim countries are going to be horrible as these governments try to hold on to power, more of it slips through their fingers. But in 25, 30, 40, 50 years, I mean, there's no way around it. It all comes from a place of the next generations are going to be less religious. And that's going to be a positive thing. And I mean, people don't want to hear that. I guess that's the core argument I have with people. And they're talking about saving the regions, saving the people, and saving the religion. And I'm not sure you can do all three. Maybe if the religion dies or gets watered down or fades away in the background, then you save the people in the region. But it won't be through bombs. It'll be through just us leaving them alone and letting them, sort it out. And England was able to conquer a quarter of the world through just pure condescension. They would go to like an island nation and be like, oh my God, this is how you live? America shouldn't drop bombs. We should drop smart-ass comments. We should just be like, really? We just make fun of them all the time, like over and over and over again. Eventually, they're going to be like, hey, why are these people laughing at us all the time? They're not afraid of us anymore. They're laughing at us. If you look at every other country in the world, and they're like a democracy, and they're talking about space travel, and they're talking about breakthroughs in medicine, and you're over there being like, how can we force women to get their clitorises cut so that they don't feel pleasure during sex? And women are going to be like, wait, I'm fucking out on this. Really? I mean, come on, guys. The Taliban used to take a ruler and go around and measure men's pubic hair to make sure that it wasn't too bushy or something about, I don't even know what it was about. just one of those strange Orwellian meets, fanaticism about sex, strangeness out there. But anyway, we'll sort it out. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.com.
Of course, you can find me at Alabama Liberal. Join us for episode 34, where we shred our last sacred cow in the trilogy.